When I was a kid, my parents owned 1 acre of farmland in the midst of hundreds of acres of farmland very close to Toronto's Pearson International Airport. Mom and Dad grew almost all the fruits and vegetables they needed to feed a family of five. Now, that acre has 4 houses on it instead of one, and all the land around it is either housing, light industrial development, or transportation and utility corridors. There was no way my father could resist selling 3 house lots off of the property because the money was so good. And as our urban areas continue to push into the rural fringe surrounding them, the pattern repeats itself. More and more farmers sell their land, often becoming instant millionaires. Those who keep their land face a number of obstacles to make a decent living. At a food security conference held in Vancouver, I listened to Nico Brunet, a graduate student at the University of Guelph, who has studied farms on the rural-urban fringe of the Greater Toronto Area. He found that there are many disincentives for farmers to keep farming, including changes in bylaws brought on by urban values imposed upon what were once totally rural municipalities.
So then the majority of the population and the vote becomes urban suddenly, and your political representation, which used to be strong at the municipal council, suddenly is gone. And you've got things like tree-cutting bylaws that go through. And some farmers that were right up on the edge were affected by this because they used to harvest that forest that they've been harvesting for 30 years, and they made money out of it, out of selling cut wood. And they're the ones who planted these forests. Suddenly they're not allowed to cut them, or they need a permit, which costs them more to cut that tree down. You know, and those little things, it's those little things that really create uncertainty and make people just not want to be there anymore. And that's really it. I mean, even financially, it might not make a big difference not to be able to sell your wood, but it's just that one more thing that makes you feel like you're not supposed to be there.
Problems facing farmers on the fringe in the GTA are likely those faced by farmers across Canada in other major urban areas. Land costs are rising. It's hard to find qualified labor. Children of farmers are less interested in carrying on their parents' legacy. And there's lots of competition for market share from cheap imports. Only 3 provinces in Canada, Ontario, BC, and Quebec, have any sort of legislation in place that is supposed to protect farmland from being developed. Brunet says the so-called Greenbelt legislation around the Greater Toronto Area isn't sitting that well with farmers.
Every farmer I talk to, they're like that. We need real proof that this is a plan for us. Because it doesn't look like it right now. It looks like it's a big park for Toronto. But we own it, and we're managing it for free. From this research, it's clear that this uncertainty is what's plaguing the industry, especially in the Greater Toronto Area, and which is limiting this innovation, which is really needed.
Shauna McKinnon, also a grad student from the University of Guelph, found a slightly brighter picture in her research. Her subject area ranged a bit further than the GTA, and she restricted her study to organic farmers only. The people she interviewed were much more likely to take an active role in the urban communities surrounding their farmland.
The first relationship is usually with their customers, because those are people that they are interacting with. But a lot of the farmers I spoke with go out of their way, especially in the winter, to go speak at public events, asked by different community groups within the areas that they live to speak about farming and organics or anything that they get asked to speak about. They go and speak because they really realize that it is the non-farming population that need to understand farming and support it, or else their farming won't be viable.
McKinnon says organic farmers are getting involved by contributing to labor education, direct marketing, and founding organizations within their communities. She calls that social capital, which turns out to be a valuable commodity for someone like Robin Tunnicliffe. Tunnicliffe and her husband farm 1 acre of land just north of Victoria, BC, but they lease it from a landowner on a 5-year contract. She says they could never afford to buy farmland that close to an urban area. Her social capital comes from having school kids and adults alike tour the farm so they learn more about where their food comes from.
I've had people come to the farm and all they do is pick a carrot, and then all of a sudden it's their farm. They're so connected. And I have little kids. I do this tour with little kindergarten kids and I can barely stand them, but I just put up with it. But like I'm right next to a school, so I can't not do it. And they come over and then they come visit me on the farm gate, and it's their farm. They're so connected, and it's like this 10-minute visit. You know, my favorite part is goodbye, everybody. But if we had NGOs that would have farm tours to the farm, and all it would have to be is like a 15-minute, you know, it would be nice to have it longer, and I would love to have it longer, but I don't have time to organize it. But the smallest little connections build bridges.
Farmers are also adapting to their customers in urban fringe areas by offering value-added products in more elaborate shops at their farms and providing agri-entertainment concepts such as corn mazes or games, and improving their links with ethnic communities that may be more willing to patronize a U-Pick operation. Or how about a drive-through to pick up fresh strawberries on the way home from work? I used to sell pumpkins at the end of our driveway at Halloween, but that land is gone forever. We should make sure we patronize the farmers who are still growing food close to our homes, and this is the season to do it. That's Food for Thought. I'm Don Genova.